These days, we hear a lot about power. Political power, solar power, nuclear power, power of the elements, you know, like earthquakes and hurricanes and storms, and floods, for which we now once again have insurance. Thank you for that response. We also see comparisons of military power or references to the balance of power in crucial regions around the earth. But far stronger than all these forms of power, stronger even than the immense energy harnessed and released by nuclear power or the forces of nature, far stronger is another even greater power. In fact, it's the power that took a dead man, and despite all the physical forces and all the spiritual forces which desperately tried to keep him dead, this power brought him back to life. This very same amazing power then took him through the very strongholds of these spiritual forces, despite their desperate attempts to keep him on earth. And it enthroned him in a position of authority and victory over them. This power is, of course, nothing less than the resurrection of power of God, which raised Yeshua from the dead, which produced his ascension and then seated him to rule over the entire universe, both seen and unseen. Rav Shaul talks about this power in the text that was our Tefillot HaBrit Chadashah portion for this evening, Ephesians chapter 1, and the prayer that's found therein. His discussion spills over into chapter 2, which was read for you tonight. And he, in a very real way, gushes on so that we don't even have a verb in chapter 2 until we get to verse 5. As he carries on the thoughts of chapter 1, verses 18 and following, and further explains this resurrection power and its implications for us. As you see it in the outline that's in one of the inserts in the bulletin, first thing he talks about in this chapter is the reach of resurrection power, the opening three verses. And he tells us that it reached out to us when we were dead. Dead? Well, described further in some translations, dead in transgressions and sins, the Hebrew term that stands behind this, as you see it translated in the translation that's provided for you in the insert on the, I think, the flip side of the outline. It has to do with disobedience. It has to do with wrongdoing. And when he says dead here, he's not talking about something physically, but he's talking about something that is just as certainly true. We're dead because of our wrongdoings and our disobedience. Sometimes that's called sin. But you'll pardon me for not using that term, because traditionally on Shabbat, we don't mention sin. Now, I know I'm sort of bending the rule a little by talking about it as disobedience and wrongdoing, but allow me that little bit of a loophole for tonight, because that's what the text talks about. Now, giving you that sort of an excuse, what does he mean when he uses this phrase? He's referring to the condition of those who have no life beyond the life of this world, which is dominated, in effect, by death and deadening stuff. And in fact, in a sense, you get an echo of Isaiah chapter 59, the opening couple verses, which gives us something of the effect of just this kind of a condition. God says concerning himself, my arm is not so short that it can't reach out to you or can't touch you, but your wrongdoings have put in a separation between me and you. And in that sense, that too is what God said to Adam in the garden, to Adam and Eve, when he said, you will die. You would have this would be the implication with regard to your relationship with me if you don't follow these particular guidelines. So it reached us when we were dead. It also, verse 2, reached us when we were dominated. And that's further amplified by the translation, because it tells us we followed the ways of this world. Depending on the translation, another good translation says, your conduct was shaped after the pattern of this world. You walked a certain way, the text says. Interestingly enough, the very first descriptor that was used of us, 2,000 years ago, and by us I don't now mean you and me, but the previous editions of you and me, or the earlier parts of the Messianic community, we were first called the Way. In other words, there was a path which we followed. The Hebrew term, I've shared this with you on a number of occasions, the Hebrew term for walk is halach, from which we derive the term halakha, which has to do with the way in which we walk or live. Look, we responded as the Torah went forth among us. What is it, O Israel, that the Lord your God requires of you? Fear him, serve him, love him, and walk in all his ways. So we were walking the wrong way, so to speak. And it's characterized by the way in which this world walks. That, by the way, is a rabbinic concept, the Olam Hazeh. It has to do with this world in which we live, as well as the influences that shape that world and the way in which we live. So it's not just the world that's in view here, but the course or the pattern of this world, the way in which perspectives and attitudes influence the way in which people respond and then live. And he says that's in contrast with the coming time or the coming world and all it represents. So what does this coming world represent? That too is a rabbinic concept. It represents God's reign through the Messiah. It represents the Torah proceeding from Jerusalem, as we just acknowledged and in fact anticipated. This resurrection power also reached us when we were disobedient. In other words, when we were walking our own way. And so the opening paragraph sets the stage then for the main point of the passage, the main message. And that has to do with the results of resurrection power. That's verses 4 to 6. Verse 4 tells us that one of the results of resurrection power was that it was a display of amazing compassion, which is why our translation nicely puts it in describing God. It talks about his intense love. It talks about his immense mercy. Verse 5 goes on to describe his grace when we were dead because of our disobedience. And it tells us we were dead toward him. And that's when this display of amazing compassion took place. And so, truly, it was amazing. A truly gracious rescue that's described here. But verses 5 and 6 now get to the heart of the message here in this chapter. And the central point that I want to share with you this evening. One of the results of resurrection power is that it is a dynamic of astounding comparison. And as we will find as we unwrap it just a little bit, and it produces an astonishing connection. And so the passage tells us that when we were dead, we were made alive. Made alive. Stark contrast to being dead due to disobedience. In other words, it has to do with our life in relationship with God. Now, we've been made alive in that fashion. It's a life beyond the life of this world, which is a dead end. It's a life of fullness and freedom. It's a life of dynamic and power. And we're not only made alive, the text says, we were raised and seated with him. Now, I usually throw out at this point in how should I put it? An apology for getting grammatical with you. At the end of a week, on a Friday night of all times, and on a Shabbat, but I've got to apologize yet again, because I'm going to get grammatical with you. But hang in there. This is not English grammar. This is Greek grammar. Yeah. Uh-oh. They all said in unison. These verbs are the things that carry on action, in case you've forgotten it, since it's Friday night, are compound verbs. There is a preposition stuck to the beginning of them. They're called sun, S-U-N in English letters, sun compounds. Now, they're very important. In fact, they are so important that I managed to do a whole thesis on these kinds of verbs. So don't worry, I'm not going to give you that thesis tonight. But if you want to read it, we do have copies. Anyhow, these are compounds that indicate, because of the nature of this preposition, sun, they indicate identification or union. In other words, you're linked with, you're connected to something or someone, you're joined to, you've become part of someone in some deeper, profound way. And the verbs that are used here are parallel to the verbs that were used in our Tefillot HaBrit Chadashah prayer from earlier this evening, Ephesians chapter 1, verses 19 and following. They're the very terms that are used there. And we know that this is the central point of this passage, because you will remember, speaking of verbs, that I said at the outset that the rabbi gushes on through this text, the end of chapter 1, into chapter 2, and there's no verb that appears until verse 5 in chapter 2. Well, we're in verse 5. So here's where the verbs appear. That's how we know this is central to his discussion. So let me remind you of our Tefillot HaBrit Chadashah portion. The rabbi says there, I pray that you will have a deep inner awareness to understand what? His incredibly great power. And too often we skip over this next phrase, his great power that is at work in us who trust him. And then he describes his power as this power is like the awesome might he used when he raised Messiah from the dead and enthroned him in the position of ultimate authority in the heavenly realms. He rules there far above any ruler, authority, power, leader, or anything else that can be imagined, not only in this world, but in the future one as well. God placed all things under Messiah's authority and installed him as the head over all things for the benefit of the Messianic community. So reads that text. Same verbs in chapter 2 are the ones used in chapter 1. But there in chapter 2, it's now that we have been united with him in just this fashion. So what is he saying here? It means that we, in some way, share in his victory and authority. That means that we can proceed in our lives in confidence, not in fear, regardless of what there may be out there that may stand in opposition to us, whether on a human or perhaps a suprahuman level. This is the kind of thing that provides us with power for living fully and freely and dynamically. He describes this taking place in the heavenly realms. And in that sense, it completes the parallel in the verses I just read for you, our Tefillot HaBrit Chadashah portion. Somehow we are seated together with him above the spirits, in contrast to being under their influence, whatever kind of spirits they may or may not be. So what does that mean for us? Among other things, it means that we don't have to be impacted by these forces, whether human forces or extra human forces. We don't have to be influenced by them. Because we have risen above them in being united with Yeshua, we can rise above them in our daily lives. And you'll notice verse 6 tells us it's because we're in Yeshua. Now here he flips prepositions. It's not the preposition sun. The preposition en or in. You would have expected the preposition sun. You should have, because I did a whole thesis that told you should have expected it. So what is he saying here? This particular preposition states the relationship we have with Yeshua in its completest form, so to speak. In other words, there's a total organic union that is described here. Look at it from a slightly different Near Eastern perspective, a historical correspondence that has taken place. Because what's happened to him has happened to us. What this text is saying, or the rabbi is saying, is that we're an integral part of him. And as Yeshua was dead, in a true sense, we died too. And so we were truly then made alive, raised and seated, installed, so to speak, in the heavenly realms. Now, again, this is an interesting concept, but it actually describes a divine action in some way contemporary with the resurrection and ascension of Yeshua. It's independent of human action. It's what God has done, what God has caused to be. In other words, what happened to him happened to us in some very real way. It functions something like this. you know, you stick a bookmark in a book, right? And then whatever happens to the book happens to the bookmark. In that same sense, we are in Yeshua and what has happened to him in a very real and profound way. Sometimes we don't even fully understand just exactly how it has happened to us as well. That is what's being said here and that we're trying to grasp. God's graciousness has lifted us, in other words, into a new life, into a new world, into new realities with new resources, and perhaps even to a new authority that we share with him. That's the core of what he's telling us here. And what are the reasons for this kind of resurrection power? Well, in the next several verses, verses 7 to 10, he explains that for us. Reason number one is so that God could exhibit his graciousness. And our text tells us it is measureless, it's rich, it's incomparable. This begins to echo with the words found in Exodus chapter 34, verses 6 and 7, where when God spoke to Moses again on that mountain, Moses was up there to see what God, wanted to see more of what God was like, so to speak. And God said, you want to know what I'm like? Here's what I'm like. I'm overflowing in mercy. I'm superabounding in graciousness. I'm spilling over in love and in compassion. And the Hebrew words run out of terms to use. That's very much the same with what's going on here when he utilizes this vocabulary here. Measureless, rich, incomparable. So God could exhibit his graciousness. And it has to do also with the coming age or ages. As I said before, this is a rabbinic concept, the Olam Haba. It's in contrast to this world in which we live, the Olam Hazeh. It's a world in which we will forever be living under the reign of the Messiah, and we get a taste of that now. It has to do with the restoration of the universe, as even all of creation itself longs for, as the rabbi who writes this passage writes in another passage, Romans chapter 8. And this graciousness is exhibited to us, the text says. As you put it all together, that implies that we're the pinnacle of his purpose. We are, in that sense, his masterpiece. Too often we come across, as you are well aware, as his messy piece, but actually we are his masterpiece. Thank you for those of you who got that, but that's okay. And this has taken place through Yeshua. In other words, Yeshua was the dramatic demonstration of God's graciousness. He was the conduit conveying that graciousness to us. But also, the reason for the resurrection power was so that God could extend his gift to us. Verses 8 and 9. And I'm not going to go into verses 8 and 9 because a number of months ago we did, in fact, look at that. And because most people have memorized this verse or these verses, I want to move on then to the next reason for his resurrection power. That has to do with verse 10, which too often we forget to add to this passage, even though the rabbi wrote it with this as part of the passage. And the reason for resurrection power, told as we're told here, it has to do with executing good works. And the first thing to notice in this part of the text in verse 10 is we are God's workmanship. It's a very interesting term. It means his crafting. Some of you do get involved in doing crafts. This is crafts to the nth degree because God's the craftsman here. It's very similar to what is later mentioned, that we are created in Yeshua. We're talking about here a new or a renewed creation. Now, by the way, the rabbi spoke about this in 2 Corinthians 5, verses 17 to 21. But the main point is, because we don't have the time to unwrap that text, is he's talking about a whole new life. He's talking about a fresh beginning with new resources. And the reason for that is because, why? Because we are in Yeshua. Because we are in the union with Yeshua. We have been not only united with him, we have been connected with him. And the purpose is, as you see at the end of this verse, to do good works. Another preposition here. Remember, I did give a full apology for doing this to you. This one is at P. It has to do with a view to. It has to do with a focus on purpose or result. And you'll notice then as you put these texts together, verses 8 and 9 with verse 10, that all of this has to do, it doesn't result from works, so it's not of works, but it is unto works. It produces works. It doesn't begin here with works, but it leads to here, namely works. What are works all about? We call them, in our tradition, mitzvot. Mitzvot, the way in which we're supposed to walk or live before God, in stark contrast with the way in which we used to, verses 2 and 3 said. Furthermore, he says these were prepared in advance, or these were planned. This reminds us once again that this is God's purpose. We have a part, the text is telling us, in accomplishing God's purpose. That means he's talking about our efforts and our activity are significant. And so we are part of his plan to bring about what's called tikkun ha'olam, the remedying or the repairing of the world. This is a very interesting text that this rabbi writes in Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10. It reminded me of another rabbi, roughly of the same time period, who said the following. For those of you who are familiar with Jewish history, it's Yochanan ben Zakkai. If you're not familiar with Jewish history, it's still Yochanan ben Zakkai. And you should become familiar with him, because had it not been for Yochanan ben Zakkai, we would not be here today. Because as the temple was falling and Jerusalem was being destroyed, he intervened to enable us to have an ongoing religious and educational presence or community that preserved Judaism after the temple fell. Enough about the commercial for Yochanan. Here's what he had to say. He says, if you perform many mitzvot, do not think you have any merit. You enter the relationship by grace, not by works, is what the previous text says, right? He says, this is the purpose for which you've been created. Quote the other rabbi again. For God handcrafted us, and in union with Messiah Yeshua, he created us for a life of doing the good he planned for us. Says exactly the same thing. Should that surprise you? No, because both of these gentlemen were very good, renowned rabbis of the first century. In conclusion, let me share with you the responsibilities of resurrection power. It's based on what we've looked at already. Resurrection power, remember, it's the greatest power in the universe. And it reached us. And for that reason, our response or responsibility needs to be to thank God. Resurrection power results, remember, in that display of an amazing comparison. God's gracious. Now, let's call it this, as we look at the terms in the text. It's his outsized graciousness and love and mercy. The resurrection power resulted not only in a display of amazing comparison, but in a dynamic of an astounding, a display of amazing compassion. I got myself confused. I put the two together. Let me pull them apart. A display of amazing compassion helps if I can read my own writing. A dynamic of astounding comparison. Remember that astonishing connection that was brought about because we've been made alive together with Yeshua. We've been brought back from the dead. We've ascended and been seated with him in parallel to and in union with Yeshua. And what we need to do by way of response or responsibility here is live in realization of this. Our lives should then reflect this as we confidently and actively draw on these resources and live in light of these realities. As we acknowledge this amazing connection and act on these truths. We were dead, now we're alive, so we can live as if we've been truly resurrected because we have, because our connection to Yeshua. Not only that, we've ascended with him in a very real way into the heavenly realms so that we don't need to be trapped by the world in which we live. And both the influences that are part of it, but also the impediments that keep us from living our lives more fully. So we don't have to be under things because we can live above them. There are reasons for this display of resurrection power. Please remember, as we just looked at it, so that we can execute good works as a new creation, doing our part in accomplishing God's purpose. I'm going to combine two languages at this point, Yiddish and Hebrew. Shouldn't be a problem because Yiddish is actually a combination of Hebrew and another language, German. Now, I'm going to do this because I have this idiosyncratic eccentricity. You like that phrasing? For alliteration. In Yiddish, there's a term for a really good person. Usually it's considered to be masculine. It's not if you understand the language. It's the term mensch. A mensch can be a woman just as easily as a man, and more often than not, it tends to be a woman more often than a man. So the purpose behind all this, and I've set it up, so we could execute good works as a new creation, doing our part in accomplishing God's purpose, as mitzvah mentioned. I went a long way to get to that, so thank you for your response. Mitzvah mentioned. That means we need to live in a new way as new creatures with new power. Remember, Rav Shaul began back in chapter 1 praying, as we, in fact, incorporated that prayer for ourselves and for each other, praying that we might know in our own, personal experience that mighty energy that is available to all the followers of Yeshua. It's the very power that raised and enthroned Yeshua. In the same way, it raised and exalted us in and with Him. Because we can't be separated from Him any more than a body can be separated from its head. At least not in... I know you can separate the head from the body, but you understand what I'm saying. There are several results of God's actions in all this. And that is that it lifts us beyond the present world and its pressures, and it sets us in the heavenly realms, and it lifts us above the control and the influences which dominate the course of life here on earth. And it seats us where Yeshua is seated, above all these powers that are or can be. It lifts us out of death, being deadened, and it makes us truly alive and alive with power. And please don't misunderstand me or the other rabbi that's talking here in this text. We're not talking about spiritual mumbo-jumbo or some sort of spooky other world. We're talking about how we live concretely on this earth and the power to live concretely on this earth above and beyond our circumstances with this new incredibly great power that's been provided to us because we are in Yeshua and we are united with and to Yeshua. So it raises the closing questions relating to the responsibilities of resurrection power. Do our lives reflect the realities of being truly alive, no longer deadened? Do we reflect the results of being joined intimately to Yeshua and lifted beyond this world and its control, reflecting Yeshua's victory over the influences around us, being lifted above the forces and the powers which dominate our world? Friends, the bottom line is this. We have supernatural resources and resurrection power available at our fingertips. So do we realize it and do we utilize it? Do we appreciate it and do we appropriate it? First, we need to understand it. Then we need to integrate and internalize it. And then we need to count on it being true in our lives as we live it. As we take this next few minutes in quiet, take the first steps on that walk, if you've not already done so, to live as if you've been raised to new heights, because you have.